From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
So here's a common story in the world of entrepreneurship. Someone has a vision, and that vision is not shared. Investors say no, partners say no, maybe even the first customers say no. But the person persists. They are sure of their vision, and they were right. It becomes a huge success. This, for example, is Tim Ferriss's story of the million rejections he got when he tried to sell his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, before a publisher finally said yes and it became a bestseller. It's Airbnb's story. And in fact, co-founder Brian Chesky once shared the first 5 rejection letters his company got, which includes an investor writing, quote, "The potential market opportunity did not seem large enough for our required model," end quote. I mean, I think it's seemed pretty large now. Anyway, you know, for everyone who's experienced the setbacks, the rejection, the frustration, but hasn't yet seen their vision pay off, these stories can be confounding because they always have the same question. How did you know? How did you know your idea was worth pursuing? How did you know that it was worth going for? How did you not believe everyone when they said, no, this isn't a good idea? How did you not just start thinking, you know what, maybe my idea does suck. Maybe they're right. Maybe they just throw this whole thing in the garbage. Because the thing is, most ideas aren't good. Statistically speaking, it's more likely that your idea is bad than good. Let's just be honest. So how do you know it's good? How do you know it's something worth pursuing despite it all? Mike Rothman knows all about this. And frankly, he didn't always maintain confidence that his idea was good because a lot of people were telling him it wasn't.
Well, I eventually did believe them. And I think that's when things became the most problematic, where you start to talk to people in whom you have incredible faith and respect, and they look at you with like their head tilted sideways and they say something equivalent to like, "Really, dude?"
Mike was setting out to build a digital media company called Fatherly, which would make content for dads. There is, of course, a world of content out there for moms. There are mom blogs and parenting podcasts for moms and parenting books that moms read and so on. But there just wasn't anything out there aimed at dads. Advice for dads, insight for dads, essays and videos and podcasts all aimed at helping men become better, more well-informed, more engaged dads. Because you know why? The general consensus was dads don't want this stuff. And when Mike and his co-founder tried to make it, people were really unconvinced.
Throughout the entire journey, people said that, you know, this is cute what you're doing, and it's really like, it's a good thing you're doing for men. Men need, and it's mostly women who would say that. Like, it's really good. Like, you know, my husband just needs to be more involved. Or you'd have men that would say, like, "I really like the idea." And that was always like a cutting compliment to me. Like, yeah, the idea is great. What about the execution? What about the execution?
Today, Fatherly is proving its original doubters wrong. It has funding, a staff of 50 and growing, 5 million uniques a month on its site, and millions more consuming its videos, podcasts, newsletters, and so on. And so I wanted to know from Mike, how did he continue to believe in an idea that so many others doubted? How did he keep going? How did he know? The answer is really big and important, and we're going to get right into it after this break. You can chart my life in some way by the domain names that I bought. In high school, I was obsessed with that movie Clerks and bought happyscrappy.com, and bonus points for anyone who gets the reference. And then off we go on big milestones. My own name when I graduated, some silly projects I did in my 20s, my wedding, my wife's name, our son's name. The thing is, domain names matter. They're like real estate for your passions, and Hover gets that. I love Hover's concept. They're focused exclusively on helping you buy the right domain name. No upsells, clean user interface, excellent customer service, personalized email, free Whois privacy. And Hover understands that in our modern digital era, you may change website builders or hosting platforms many times, so their Connect feature allows you to make the switch with just a few clicks. Check it out. Go to hover.com/problem solver to get 10% off your first purchase. That's hover.com/problem solver. All right, we're back. So first, how did Mike get involved in this crazy idea for Fatherly in the first place? It starts a few years ago, after he left his job at Thrillist, where he was one of the company's earliest employees.
As I was leaving Thrillist, I started to become more attuned, as one does, to LinkedIn requests. And someone had made a request. We had like 100 mutual connections. I said, sure, let's get coffee. And one of the three people that this person recommended I speak with was Simon. And so I met with Simon maybe 3 weeks later, and we had what became kind of a fateful initial conversation.
Simon is Simon Isaacs. He had a social impact background and was a new dad and had the idea for a company called Fatherly that would serve dads. And when Mike and Simon met, they talked about this idea. Mike isn't a dad, but he'd been a big brother since 1999 and had worked with a nonprofit called Career Gear that impoverished men use to get mentoring and life skills so they can improve their lives. So Mike was alert to the needs of men. And also, he saw a business case to be made here.
I thought it made intuitive sense as someone that had seen this audience of young single people of age quite naturally into this next phase of their lives. And I saw that they had entered what was ultimately the most blindly inquisitive and acquisitive phase of their lives. And there really wasn't any native digital mobile offering that seemed to service those needs.
They decided that the first thing they needed was an initial proof of concept. What could they build that would provide value to dads and that would prove Fatherly as an idea worth building upon? So they looked around the world of parenting content and, no surprise here, found that there's a ton of it, way too much of it, really. So their first thought was, let's become the greatest aggregator of content, boiling it down to just the most interesting and useful stuff and presenting it in an engaging way. So they used Feedly to pull in tons of content and then built a weekly email newsletter where they'd share a mix of what they found. And now the question was, who's going to subscribe to this newsletter?
We then partnered with the 92nd Street Y, which is actually the oldest parenting organization in the country, and certainly in New York. We had access to them through connections that Simon had. Turns out that they've seen this explosion of parents, both moms and dads, taking these new parent workshops. And they had a need to provide continuing education beyond just the scope of an 8-week class. And so we said, hey, we're building this email newsletter. This is the purpose. Here's some of the sample content that we've produced so far. And they said, this sounds terrific. We'll allow you to send a dedicated email to the several thousand people who've taken a new parenting workshop at the 92nd Street Y.
Mike and Simon built a simple landing page and then sent out that email to all these parents, and about 8% of them signed up for Fatherly's newsletter. That was about 400 people. And then the two co-founders decided, okay, let's set some benchmarks here. For 8 weeks, we will serve these people our newsletter and see what happens.
We're very honest with ourselves about what success would look like. So we had an open rate that we wanted to hit, an organic growth rate, and maybe 2 clicks per email that we wanted to see on average. And we saw very quickly that we were hitting those metrics. We weren't sandbagging. Like, these were like good metrics for anyone with an email newsletter. And we saw that the email went from 400 to 1,000 people in very short order.
By the end of 8 weeks, Mike and Simon were happy with what they were seeing and decided to keep going. By the time they reached 5,000 newsletter subscribers, they started to think, okay, it's time to do more with this. Let's build original content as well and send out a mix of original and curated stuff. But of course, that requires money to pay writers and editors, which meant they needed to go out and find both. So this is in 2014, and I should say here, this is also when I first met Mike. I was at a different job at the time, and we got connected through, I don't even remember who, but anyway, it doesn't matter. We got coffee, and he told me about Fatherly, and I thought it was interesting and ambitious, but also not really something I'd want to work on, and frankly, I'm sure I wasn't so convinced it would survive. So I said, thank you for your time, and I wish you the best. Now, years later, I'm learning that I was just one of a chorus of people who were saying things like that to him. VCs just weren't biting, and he talked to 120 of them. 120. And even other people in the parenting industry were super skeptical.
There's even this one woman, I spent maybe like 2 months to get a connection to, Tina Sharkey, who now runs Brandless. At the time, she was also like the former like CEO of Baby Center, kind of like the granddaddy or in the parenting space. They claimed like 78% of America's moms signed up for the Baby Center email. And I presented this to her. I was really excited. I thought maybe she would be an advisor. And I remember she was like late to the call, and then she was finally on, and it made me feel like it was a pitch meeting, and I was really just trying to like solicit her advice. And she's like, yeah, you know, if we tried to target men once at Baby Center, didn't really hold. I gotta go. And it was just crushing to me. And I remember turning to Simon, my partner, and thinking, well, you know, Tina isn't into it, and like she knows this space.
So let's pause on this moment here, because this would certainly seem like the time when people might give up, or at least as Mike was starting to do after this rejection from Tina, significantly doubt whether the idea they have is really a good one. How do you evaluate yourself in this moment? I mean, just how do you? There are a couple ways to approach it. Number one, you have to understand where rejections might be coming from. Why are people saying no? And is it you or is it them? In the case of Tina's rejection, Simon decided it was them.
He basically said, like, you know, to hell with that. Like, you know, they're just not thinking creatively. Baby Center is like a, you know, like a giant tanker, just laser focused on women. Of course, you can't just like make a token gesture to men and get them to connect with this concept.
Which, you know, sounds like a good theory. What Fatherly is doing is very different from what a men-focused Baby Center program would do, and it's possible that the learnings from one wouldn't translate to the other. And also, why were VCs saying no? Mike had a theory.
The thing about VCs is, you know, they're fairly well off, and a lot of them usually have nannies and services, or some of them just tend to be a bit older and have more, like, you know, traditional notions of what child-rearing means.
Not bad, right? Could explain it. But, let's not fall into a trap here in which we rationalize away every negative thing someone says. That is how conspiracy theorists are made, when they won't simply look at real facts and instead just twist those facts to fit their own existing narrative. And it has to be said, it's entirely possible that Fatherly was a bad idea at this point. They did not know for sure. But that is where the most important element of all of this comes in. It isn't a hunch or a belief in a good idea or the rationalizing of people's rejections. It is data. Hard data. At the time, Mike was also consulting for a lot of big companies like Giphy and Birchbox and learning about how they think and scale. And one of his major takeaways was that decisions have to be made by data. Think about how Fatherly approached its very first newsletter subscribers. They spent 8 weeks watching the metrics to see if they were onto something. By the time they got to 5,000 subscribers, they had a good sense that they were indeed onto something, even if it was still too small for VCs and other partners to care about. But they weren't just making a blind hunch. They were testing it out in the real world and trusting what the data showed. You know how I said that entrepreneurs ask that question, that I, you know, the one I talked about at the very beginning of the show? How do you know? How do you know it was a good idea? You know because it's being proven. You know because you've started with a hunch and did some kind of small execution and you tracked what happened and you adjusted to the data and then you watched the results in data and now you know because you have results. That's how you know. And that, frankly, is how you can convince others that you're right. And here's the thing about Mike and his approaches to VCs. He was super strategic about how he built those relationships. He basically primed them to take the data seriously. So, step one, Mike found ways in by proving himself to other people who VCs trust. Remember how I said Mike was consulting for some other big startups while getting Fatherly off the ground?
XYZ challenge. I'm also really interested in launching this business. And it, usually at like the 6 month mark of these various engagements, whether it was BarkBox or whether it was the folks at BetaWorks, when I developed conviction, I'm like, you know what, I think I'm going to go like, you know, raise money. These founders really opened up their Rolodex for me. And that was, I'd say, incredibly helpful because the founders could then say with conviction that like, hey, this guy, you know, has an idea. He said he was going to do something for me. He did it. And I think you should meet with him.
So by being patient and by proving his value before asking for value, he got his intros. And then during those initial meetings with investors, he didn't ask for money. This is a part of the story that we kind of skipped over here when we were talking about him being rejected. But listen, he didn't ask for money during those initial meetings where people were saying like, I don't know. He just repeated the trick, creating a situation in which he could prove himself before making any ask.
I think, you know, having this consistent narrative that started maybe 12 months before there was a formal ask was really, really helpful to say that, like, hey, here's a thing that we're working on. Here's a problem. Here's a large problem that we think we're going to be able to solve. Here's a very, very specific problem that we're going to solve first. And that was the, you know, can we use a curatorial approach to generate engagement from an audience of men who may previously have not kind of identified with being in the market for this type of content. And then from there, we had an email list of like 10,000 over the course of a year without any paid marketing. And so after, you know, I had maybe three coffees with these folks, with each update, you know, showing them some, you know, originally it was just the curated email, and then it was a curated email, some original content, which we hosted on a Tumblr. And so now we had, you know, some additional data to showcase it, like, hey, people are reading a 500-word article, a 1,000-word article. And we had a little bit of revenue coming in from one consulting client to say, like, hey, we're taking this seriously, and we're actually, like, paying real journalists to go, you know, to make this content even better. And then we had more numbers to show. And after a while, like, even if this was someone who was kind of opposed to the idea or just didn't really connect with them personally, the data was there. And also, I think they just appreciated the consistency and even just like the persistent approach to like, hey, let's catch up in 3 months. And then actually having something material to show during that time.
Mike estimates it took about 18 months to get the first yes from an investor. And once one was in, others followed. And now Fatherly had the money to build out a site, move to all original content, and really expand its mission.
We had, you know, one editorial director. We needed to focus on marketing, initially just through partnerships. And we recognized that other players in the parenting space could be really useful because we were focusing on high quality content in a space that relied on a lot of, you know, kind of longer tail like SEO. And, you know, what we were doing was maybe a bit more thoughtful. We were, you know, applying real journalism and emotional honesty to create great parenting content. So finding experts that previously weren't being tapped for their parenting expertise, like a Navy SEAL captain giving tips on how to dominate hide and seek, or like an architect from, you know, the Yale School of Architecture on like making amazing pillow forts. And this was content that was imminently syndicatable to a bunch of other outlets.
Very smartly, the team also started to develop some tentpole editorial programs that it could do every year and get media attention for. For example, they created a list called the 50 Best Places to Work as a New Dad. And they did another one called the Imagination Report, where they talked to 500 five-year-olds about what they wanted to be when they grow up. And because I'm sure you're curious, I was, the 2017 Imagination Report found that the top five professions that kids want to be when they grow up are doctor, vet, engineer, police officer, and teacher. I wonder where a podcaster is on that list. Probably low. Very interestingly, the number one profession in the 2015 report was athlete, but now that's fallen to number 8. Oh, and the Imagination Report is now produced in partnership with the insurance company New York Life, which makes it a nice and monetizable product. But outside of tentpoles like that, the team just started producing and experimenting. Like I said before, video, podcast, stories, they're hosting live events now and developing a long-form TV show, and that's where Fatherly is now. It's a media brand, which, as I know well, means that it's in an ever-shifting landscape and will need to constantly stay attuned to its audience and the many ways to reach them. But it's a real thing, serving real dads and producing stuff those dads really want to read. And Mike has noticed a change now in the way that people talk to him about the brand. For years, even after Fatherly was getting investor money and building the brand, people would always say to him, oh, that sounds like an interesting idea, but does it really work?
You know, I think maybe it stopped about 6 months ago, which was like a really big milestone. It went from like, I love the idea of Fatherly to I love Fatherly. And that's a big moment.
But that doesn't come as a surprise to Mike. Why? Because though there were many doubters, he had two things on his side: data and the patience to build that data until its conclusion was undeniable. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonpfeiffer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N-F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Pfeiffer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonpfeiffer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.